Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 11th of June. Last week, a dozen area school leaders gathered at Rangeline School in the Mequon-Thiensville School District to ask members of the Wisconsin Legislature to amend the state budget for K through 12 schools. One of our guests this hour, the Mequon superintendent, says we're asking them to reconsider the amendments passed by the Joint Finance Committee and to reinvest in public schools. Other administrators from Kettle Moraine, Glendale, River Hills, Fox Point, Bayside, Wauwatosa, South Milwaukee, Greendale, West Dallas, West Milwaukee, Northern Ozaukee, and Menominee Falls were at that meeting as well. And we're going to be talking about the budget. There have been some changes, perhaps due to concerns expressed by superintendents and parents and educators all over the state to some of these proposed changes to public education. We'll talk about that and what changes our guests would like to have. Yesterday, Governor Scott Walker, in a letter to the Des Moines Register, touted changes that he's made to K through 12 education. He said there is no reason that what he's done in the state can't be matched nationwide. Now more than ever, the governor said, we need to push big, bold reforms to improve our society. And we'll talk about expanding school choice. We'll talk about a cut in funding. And we'll look at whether or not there is support among legislators for public education. The state superintendent has said that Wisconsin is nationally known for quality public schools. We're a leader among states in graduation rates, advanced placement participation, ACT scores. We have highly trained educators and support of families and local communities. So we asked the question this hour, too, why does it behoove us to change what we have now instead of strengthening public education? So that's what's on the table for this hour, and we have a lot to discuss. Pat Greco is joining us. Pat is superintendent of Menominee Falls School District. Pat, thank you very much for joining us in our studio.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Yes, our pleasure. Damon Means is also with us. He is superintendent of Mequon-Thiensville Schools. Damon, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for the invitation.
And also joining us is our third guest is on phone, Phil Ertle, who is superintendent of Wauwatosa Public Schools. And Phil, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Appreciate being here.
Yeah, it's good to have you. Our phone number, and we'll get plenty of calls this hour, I'm sure, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we are also on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. Let's start with you, Damond. What is it that you see most problematic now in proposed legislation that would affect public schools?
I think the fact that there is a lack of inflationary increase for public schools is a concern. The second concern I have is the expansion of voucher schools. And the third is the phase out, the proposed phase out of the Chapter 220 program for me personally, because it impacts children who look like me, who are children of color, who are living in poverty. I think those three components of this proposed state budget is very, very troubling.
Pat, would you like to add to that, agree with that?
And we agree. The revenue limit freeze is the item that probably represents the concern that we've had ongoing, where the revenue limits are not keeping pace with inflation. It's not a sustainable funding system, and it's actually causing challenges for every district across the state. In addition to that, the voucher expansion, the special education vouchers, the bantering back and forth regarding doing letter grades for schools, those all represent really problematic areas that are more conceptual, but when you really look at how the implementation would take place, create great concern among the schools across the state of Wisconsin.
And when you say revenue limit freeze, can you explain that more? How does that affect both of your districts?
So Tommy Thompson in the early 1990s implemented a revenue cap on school boards, duly elected school boards, in essence tying their hands and indicating from the state capitol how much they could raise revenue to continue to run their school districts. But at least Tommy Thompson had a philosophy that revenue cap should move with, with CPI and inflationary costs. In the last 4 years, with Governor Walker's leadership, we've seen that that revenue cap has been frozen, and we haven't been able to keep up with inflationary costs. Initially, his rationale was, well, I've given you the tools, quote unquote, through Act 10. And in essence, that was a message to hurt public educators across the state and to use them to finance our schools. But that's what a revenue cap is. A revenue cap has been in, revenue caps have been in place in our state for over 20 years. But at least when they were initially implemented, they were implemented with the idea that school districts would be able to raise the revenue cap with inflationary costs.
Phil, let's go to you for a moment from Wauwatosa Schools. You've had a very active parent group, too. We had them on the air a couple weeks ago. What would be the impact of the expansion of voucher schools in the state to your school district and other public school districts?
You know, I think the impact, there's a couple of things. And when I look at the entire budget and the budget process, what I get most concerned about is just kind of the overall lack of commitment to public education. And when you've gone through a number of biennial budgets and see that you wait for it to turn and think we can get through this, and then there's all these other components that have been added into the budget, and vouchers being one of them. In Wauwatosa, we have the best choice program in the state of Wisconsin, open enrollment. Our open enrollment students achieve at an extremely high level. Our schools are successful. Our schools, we don't need the voucher system for our families. Our parents have had a choice. Parents have chosen to go to private and parochial schools for a long time, and there's a good percentage of them that make that choice. And to add the vouchers and to take the money away from state aid, ultimately across the state, the money that goes to vouchers doesn't go to the entire public school. So ultimately what it ends up doing is creating higher taxes for our taxpayers.
What do you make of Phil's comment? And I'm wondering, I know you're not on this side, you're public education advocates, but I think he's right that there does seem to be, if not an anti-public school sentiment, it's fairly lukewarm support and commitment for public education in the state. When you sit back and think about that, and we know that it's worked very well, we have very high ACT scores, people like their public schools in the state of Wisconsin. It's not as though people are saying we need a whole new system because all of our students are failing. How do you answer that? Why is there not much of a commitment to public education?
I think I'll start. I think if you ask them, are they committed, their answer probably would be yes. Their behavior doesn't demonstrate that. You can't say that it's a core commitment to educate. You know, over 88% of the children in the state of Wisconsin attend a public school. And then policy year after policy year, set policy that is eroding the support structure to the point where many of the northern Wisconsin schools now have to go to an operating referendum every single
really?
Year to sustain their operating budget. The response from the legislators will be if the local communities value it, they would pass an operating referendum. That toll on districts is high, and in the same policy breath, they're willing to say for the taxpayers of Menominee Falls, we're going to increase the property taxes by $5,100 per child to produce the revenue for the voucher children, because that's what it would mean for our district. We're a low-aided district. The bulk of the funding comes from our local property taxes, and we're a high-performing school district. So the policy being advanced doesn't match the conditions for our community.
There was great concern about changing licensure of teachers. I understand that some of that has changed now, and I would imagine it's because of a lot of people saying, we don't want this. There had been a suggestion that you didn't even need to be a graduate of high school to teach non-core subjects in schools. Now it appears as though you just need a college degree for tech schools, but they're asking for, Senator Darling is saying they may tweak this some so that you'll need some educational background how to teach in order to be a middle or high school teacher. Did those changes come? Do you think those changes will be in the budget? And did they come because you were very concerned about what was happening with teacher requirements?
I think what we're seeing right now is a true overreach by the legislature. And I think even the pushback within their caucus caused them to pause. But I'll go back to your earlier question. I think there's an element of mean-spiritedness with the proposals that are coming as it addresses public education. And what factor or what motivation is behind this mean-spiritedness, I'm not quite sure. I personally believe that we have great public schools in this state, yet there's an element of using kids of color to leverage an agenda to widen vouchers. And what I mean by that is when Republican legislators are asked, why are you expanding vouchers, they constantly point back to Milwaukee Public Schools. As a Milwaukee Public Schools grad, I can tell you there are a lot of high-functioning, good MPS schools. So to focus only on the schools that are failing is inappropriate. But furthermore, my state senator, Senator Alberta Darling, doesn't focus on the six high-achieving schools that I have in my school district or the high-achieving schools that Pat has. I'm fascinated that Senator Voutmeer wants to focus on Milwaukee Public Schools and the failing schools, yet she is not listening to her constituents in Wauwatosa. I think this is all part of a strategy to divert people's attention to what's really at play here, which is to dilute and to weaken traditional public schools. And that's part of what's happening here. And I take great offense to it because the children who need our help the most in the city of Milwaukee are being used as pawns to expand a philosophical perspective of weakening traditional public schools.
And do you think, we talked about this some yesterday, just as a sidebar to what we were discussing for the full hour, do you think that there are people who philosophically believe that it's a better way to educate children, that they have the best of intentions, or is there an element of some, as some have suggested, that there is money to be made here, that getting private bodies involved in voucher schools and in charter schools is going to open up the field of education to making more money? Which is it, or is it a combination of both?
I think it would be inappropriate for us to try to figure out what their intentions are. And so I'm not quite sure what the philosophy or the motivation is behind this movement that we've seen now for at least 4 years. But your point that you're making in regards to whatever the motivation is, there's something happening. That's what's so maddening to me about the Chapter 220 component of this budget bill, right? So there's an argument that we want to expand choice. Well, 220 is the state's original choice program.
And explain what that is for people who don't know. Please.
Sure. So the Chapter 220 program is a voluntary desegregation program that allows children from the city of Milwaukee to come to suburban schools and for suburban residents to go into Milwaukee public schools. My advocacy for Chapter 220 is really at the core of it to get to their philosophy. And when I say their, I mean the Republican legislators. Help me understand, if you support choice, why aren't you supporting 220? Because that's a choice program. We had to turn away 90% of the families who applied for seats in our school district this year because we just didn't have the space. So there's interest in the program. It's a choice program. So it kind of answers your question. If you're willing to do away with a traditional public school choice program, yet you're willing to expand a voucher private school program, I think the philosophies and the answers to the questions that you've been asking in regards to what's the philosophy is right there and embedded in the program. Mm-hmm. The last thing I would say is this. Often people will say that education is the civil rights movement of the 21st century. I've heard that a lot. Well, if that is the case, then Wisconsin must be the Alabama of the 21st century. Because when you look at the performance of children of color in this state, it's the lowest in the country. And for a governor and the legislature to shut the door, to stand in the schoolhouse door for children in the city of Milwaukee to go to high-quality, traditional public schools, I think is something that the entire state should pause. And frankly, the nation should pause and think about if, as he wrote in his article, op-ed a few days ago, if he was the president, he would want to expand this and make it a national program. I think this is a dangerous moment for our state. It's a watershed moment for the state. I think that's why you're seeing parents all across the state and superintendents standing up and saying, we need to pay attention to what's happening.
Pat, we keep hearing figures from different districts that if the cuts that you have already experienced and the lack of an increase to keep up with the cost of living stays the way it is, if that stays in the budget, that we're going to lose art programs, we're going to lose theater programs, we're going to lose all kinds of things. Is your district facing that? Are you finding bigger class sizes, reduction in programs?
Here's the challenge that we have. We are going to be planning into the 2016-17 school budget with a $1.7 million deficit that we will have to reduce opportunities or programming options. It can't be in the core areas because those are required. Parents know that when their children pick programming, they're doing it out of their passions. So when we take a look at the elective areas, what children can participate in as far as co-curriculars, it can't be in the areas of instructional support because it's mandated that all children make growth and demonstrate progress. It will have to be in class size and programming. You know, all of the districts are already working on the efficiencies that were allowed in changing benefits. Those triggers have all been pulled. The revenue limits still do not pace with the rate of inflation. So fuel, heat, energy, all of that is outpacing where our ability to actually leverage funds are coming from.
Phil, how would the Wauwatosa district be affected?
You know, we've looked at it, and Wauwatosa has been very conservative with their budgeting for a long period of time. We have a fund balance that we subscribe to that we don't short-term borrow, never have, and the board's philosophy is we're not going to short-term borrow. I think the situation that we see right now is we're going to use fund balance for next year to meet ongoing expenses, and the school board is going to be meeting this summer to have discussions about long-term planning and what is our district going to look like down the road, and if cuts come forward, what's going to be gone. All of the things are on the table in our school district. If open enrollment, I mean, voucher payments are $1,500 more than open enrollment, which to me makes absolutely no sense. But with the number of open enrollment students we have, we're going to have to reconsider. I think there's just a lot of things that are going to have to be considered, the configuration of our school district, co-curricular opportunities. Fund balance only lasts so long. Running your school district on the backs of teacher compensation only lasts so long. Fewer people are going into it. Our pool of candidates, which not only impacts public schools but private and parochial schools and voucher schools, are going to have a different pool of candidates if things don't change a little bit. So it's going to have a significant impact down the road.
What about the, obviously politicians are listening to you in some small way because some of this has been changed. What might be, if you have 78% of those polled in the state of Wisconsin saying they don't like these changes to public education, it would seem to me as though some of the legislators must be thinking there are political ramifications. Do you think that you've reached a tipping point in terms of all of the superintendents from fairly wealthy districts, when you compare them to MPS at the meetings, people from all over the state of Wisconsin who are in public education who are extremely concerned about this, parents who are forming organizations. Aren't there ramifications for legislators?
I think what I have seen in the last week is very interesting. The way that the parents from Wauwatosa were treated in a meeting earlier this week by state legislators, they were shouted down. Just today in the local Ozaukee County paper, there was an op-ed done by State Senator Dewey Strobel that focused on my advocacy for the children of our school district and personalized it. What I think we're going to see in the next couple of weeks here is that legislators who want to ram down the throats of the taxpayers of Wisconsin this expansion of vouchers, they're going to shut down and villainize anyone who advocates for public education, traditional public education. And you've noticed that all three of us have said traditional public education, because with this proposed budget, the legislature is trying to blur the lines between what is a public school and what isn't a public school. And I think some legislators will say, well, public dollars are going to a voucher school. That makes it a public school. My mother and father would consider a traditional public school the schools that Pat run or the schools that Phil run or I run, not St. Marcus. That's a voucher school. And independent charter schools, those are for-profit franchises. Those are very different than the schools that our community expect and they want us to maintain. And I guess the other thing that's troubling is that when you look at traditional public schools across the state, they're great schools. They're not failing schools, but the political language that the legislature is using right now is that traditional public schools are failing. That is not true.
I think that's part of my concern as well, is the policy is actually being advanced without hearing the input of the stakeholders most affected. They're actually advancing it on schools that are not demonstrating the attributes that they're saying they're trying to cure with the policy. So it's a mismatch between policy and evidence, but they're willing to actually name call individuals that are their stakeholders, and that would actually be counter to what the representation of the people would be. And at the same time, they're advancing a required civics test. So there's a little irony there that they're going to require the children take a civics test under the underpinnings of what our government is based on, but they're willing to shout down the people they represent. It's just poor practice.
We'll start taking phone calls. We have a full bank of phone lines going right now, but keep the number in mind. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We're talking about public education in the state of Wisconsin and all of the proposed changes to public education, the significant expansion of vouchers, the licensing requirement changes, which seems to be in flux these days because there's been a lot of concern expressed about that, what the budget impacts have already been on public education, and what the current proposals would do to public education, and whether or not this is a good thing. Is it a better way to educate, to do vouchers, to have a mixture of schools? Can you do it a lot less expensively, as some have said, who are proponents of voucher programs? We welcome your thoughts. Here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655, email talk@WPR.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Please leave messages there. We'd love to read them. And we're on Twitter at @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls. We have so many of them. Sean in Wauwatosa. Hi, Sean.
Hey, how are you?
All right, how are you?
Doing okay. I guess I've got a question for our superintendent, but maybe the other folks on the line might also have responses. But my question is, we understand that this expansion of spending on private voucher schools is supposed to steadily grow over the next 10 years with, you know, a little bit in the first year and then growing and growing until it gets to the 10th year and then going up after that. For Phil Ertl, do you know the amount that it's supposed to, that amount that might be diverted from public schools to private schools, you know, in year one and year five and year 10?
Phil?
Yeah, my understanding is if you look at a high school student of $7,800 per student and 1% of the membership of your school district, which for us is about 5,500 students, so, and that would multiply each year for 10 years, and then after that the cap is off. So you can see the amount if the students make that choice that is being diverted from the public schools. It's obviously in the millions of dollars that would be diverted to the voucher schools.
Sean, what do you think about all of this?
I mean, I've got three kids in public schools, and I'm very, like I said, very satisfied with the public schools that they attend. You know, they go to Lincoln Elementary, and it's one of the best schools in the state. And for me, you know, I just want to make sure that their school has the ability to, you know, fund my kids' education, because, I mean, it's the reason that we moved to Wauwatosa, to be honest, is to have these high-quality schools. And I would hate for anything to detract from that, you know, without really, really, really good reason. And from what I've heard about, you know, voucher schools, you know, I hear the argument, but I've also, you know, heard the research showing that voucher schools, you know, don't perform on average as well as public schools. So, you know, for me, I just care about my kids and want the best for them. And I'm just worried about them and their school being able to be able to have enough of what they need.
Thank you, Sean, for your call. Let's go to Therese in Stevens Point. Hi, Therese.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a proud product of public education, traditional public education, and that includes a great education from the University of Wisconsin. And it really disheartens and demoralizes me what's happening with public education. There was just a report in, I forget which, if it was Milwaukee Journal or Wisconsin State Journal, about following where the money goes. If you look at the defunding coupled with the changes in requirements for teachers, the pieces should start to fall together. If you start following the money, if you look at where Walker is getting his contributions, if you look at the actions and policies of things like the Bradley Foundation, and look at what the efforts are of, like, the Walton family. This is a big opportunity for them to make money. And not only that, but political groups to influence what is being taught in our public schools. And so you need to follow the money. A lot of Republicans don't believe in public education. They think everything should be privatized. And there are a lot of big companies out there that would love to get into the business of education. And I don't think we can also decouple what's going on with K-12 with what's happening at the university system, too. Not just the budget cuts themselves, but what's happening in terms of a corporatization model where faculty and students, their voices are going to be reduced, chipping away at the tenure process so that faculty don't are going to be afraid to speak out against their administrators, and giving administrators more power and less oversight by the taxpayers themselves. So I think we need to follow the money trail, look at the money that's behind Walker. And I know our guests are hesitant to speculate and speak out because, you know, there's a lot of name calling and actually retribution. And I do agree that there's also a degree of mean-spiritedness and political retribution for teachers and public mm-hmm. educators speaking out against that, Ken. But we also have to realize that Walker publicly stated that his cuts to the university and changes in policy were going to be his version of Act 10. For the university. So I think we need to look at the big picture and look at the pieces that are falling in place and follow where the money is coming.
Thank you, Therese, very much for your call. Let's go back to the issue of teacher qualifications. I'm trying to get a handle, and I'm not sure anybody's done a big study, but it would be hard to believe that lots and lots of students are choosing teaching as a profession in the state of Wisconsin, considering what's happening with teachers. I know many teachers are extremely demoralized and have been since Act 10, and now there's a real sort of stab at teachers by saying, well, you know, your profession isn't all that valuable. Anybody can teach. You don't really need to take courses to understand student development. Well, maybe somebody suggests you don't even need a high school diploma to teach certain areas. I mean, that's really undercutting the importance of teachers in our society. Can you tell from your school districts what's happening with teacher morale and what will, as we briefly mentioned, happen with the future pool of teachers if this is the climate in the state?
Morale, I'll start if you don't mind. I think morale for our teachers is at an all-time low. And people are questioning should they stay in the state of Wisconsin to teach. And it's so sad because this used to be a destination state for educators, public educators in particular.
Phil?
I think our morale in Wauwatosa is low, but I know we've got some great professionals in our school district that come to work every day, and they're going to work in the best interest of our students. And they've done that through the Act 10 issues, and we've had some additional challenges with Governor Walker's kids in our schools, and we took great care to make sure they weren't impacted by all of that. But our teachers, you know, that's a struggle each and every day when they feel like they've been deprofessionalized. We know there's fewer applications for teaching positions. We can go on our weekend system, and I see it every day. We used to get 500 applicants for every elementary position. It's not that way anymore. We still have a lot, and I think that's going to continue to go down. In the education schools we've looked at and talked with, their applicant pool or their applicants for those schools are going down as well. So inevitably, fewer teachers means lower quality and not as good of education, because education, all the money and everything else and all the policies that put in place, it comes down to that interaction between teachers and students. And if we don't have the best people in front of those kids, our kids will suffer. And that's my biggest concern with all of this that's going on.
I think one of the concerns that I'd actually add to the conversation is we talk on one side of the ledger that we really want to be internationally competitive. You know, we want high standards. We want to make sure that our children can compete with children from all over the world. The other countries that we're trying to benchmark against have the exact opposite in their core messages around the core values of the teaching profession. We're doing a poor job as a country right now, not just as a state. We're doing a poor job as a country of actually demonstrating a core commitment to teaching as a profession, that value, the importance of it for our society. Teachers don't just produce children going into college. They produce the underpinnings of every profession. This is a core issue for our nation. We have to stop that targeting of that as an issue. And it's really around salary, benefits, those types of things. But the teaching profession should really gain the honor that the other nations that we're trying to benchmark with have, because quite frankly, we are the best in the nation in Wisconsin. And among that, we have the highest performing educators. We have to actually come back to grips with the fact that that's where our teachers have been performing and continue to. And we're vilifying them. It's a mismatch, again, between our core, what we should hold as core values, and how we're sending those messages to the people that we should value most.
They produce each one of us, right? Each
Correct.
One of us can remember, I could ask you and I won't, who a teacher was who made a huge difference in your life and directed your life. We'd all have teachers who did it.
All I would say is that what we're seeing is something very politically consistent. When Governor Walker was the county executive, and I'm speaking as a lifelong Milwaukee County resident now, there was a boogeyman that was identified, and then it was the unions and the contracts in Milwaukee County, right? And then eventually he utilized that authority to weaken what we used to have in this county as one of the great models for our park systems and other services that Milwaukee County offered, and that's gone away. This is politically consistent with what he has done as a legislator and as an executive. The boogeyman for the state right now has become educators and traditional public schools. And what I would just say to your listeners right now, Kathleen, is that when Pat and Phil and I sit in budget meetings within our school districts, typically we have to identify things that we have to cut based on the mandates from the state legislature. So they set the rules, and then we have to make cuts locally. And that's typically when the parents come out, and they come to the meetings, and they advocate for defending those programs within our school districts. What I would urge parents who are listening across this state to think about is now is the time to go to your legislatures and make sure that those cuts are not implemented, so then Pat and Phil and everyone else across the state, school board members, don't have to make those cuts. But what happens is that we get blindsided by what's really happening, and that is there's policy being made in Madison that's going to impact all of us across the state.
Let's go to Tom next in Stevens Point. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi.
I can't believe the dribble I'm hearing here. First of all, this is not public education. This is government education. Can you tell me one government agency that is proficient in anything? And I'd like to ask those superintendents, how much money are you costing us taxpayers?
Where did you go to school, Tom? Did you go to public schools?
Tax cut.
Did you go to public schools, Tom?
Yes, I went to a government school.
And I
substitute teach in many government schools right now.
Uh-huh.
These kids can't even read. They can't write. They can't write a sentence. They can only not write a sentence. They can't write, period.
I'm not sure. I've had a totally opposite experience in all the schools that I've been in.
But
government
Kathleen,
schools.
Kathleen, I do appreciate Tom's call because it's interesting. I think at the core, we can't ignore the fact that legislators are viewing my colleagues and I are as opponents to their effort to weaken an entity of government. And so they don't view us as educators. They don't view us. They view the taxation of running quality public schools as just that, taxation. And they don't, you've heard us all talk about children today and the future of our society. There are some people in our state who view this as a taxation issue, and the more we can weaken things from a taxation component, the better. Because we understand in our communities that you have to have a certain standard, and it's going to cost to have a high-quality public education. This concept that you can educate children at $7,800 and it's going to be a high-quality program is not relevant. The last thing I would say is this. It's infuriating to me to hear legislators say, well, look at St. Marcus. And I love Henry Tyson and what he's doing over there. But that's the equivalent of Darian Driver being able to turn around and say, well, look at Rufus King. Mm-hmm. Look at Spanish Immersion. Mm-hmm. They point out one school. For every St. Marcus, there's a lot of schools that aren't doing well. Or look at the independent charter schools. No one's talking about Universal School, for example, that's just popped up. It's not a great school system. The point here is we understand that this is about advocacy around taxation. We understand it and frankly embrace it.
All right, Tom. Thanks for your call. Mel in Brookfield. Hi.
Hi. I think everybody's being extraordinarily polite and dancing around because they can't say it. That what is happening here is the lobbying from the private education groups that stand to make billions of dollars across this country because they will get government dollars. They will, because there's not enough private money for them and to then educate everybody in the country. There's not enough private money for them to make the money they want to make. It is also philosophical about not wanting to teach real science. And they lobby tremendously and put a lot of money into the coffers to reelect these people. And unfortunately, when election time comes, it will then again be all about abortion, all about guns, all about gays, all about the persecution of Christians, et cetera, ad nauseum, which will make everybody forget what is real. And again, they'll get reelected. And until public education is completely destroyed, except the fact that tax dollars will go to private industry, they won't be satisfied.
Thank you, Mel, very much for your call. There are a couple other issues that I want to discuss. There has been a link made between the amount of public money that would go into a new Bucks Arena and a siphoning of that money from public education. Is that an issue that can be made, or are they separate issues completely? What do you think?
I think part of the challenge is we have to go back to what are the core values as a state as we want, of what we want to advance. We want a thriving business community for our communities. We want Milwaukee to have a healthy business community. We want them to have healthy schools. We want to have high-performing children who are well-prepared to be able to be the future business leaders for the state of Wisconsin. We want to be able to compete not just with Finland, but with Minnesota. Right now, Minnesota's economic climate, their performance climate, they're beating us on many metrics, and we're falling below the national average now in our investment. I think we have to stay really clear on core values and what we value most to invest in long-term and not pit area against area. We want strong healthcare, strong business climate, strong education climate, and there's going to have to be a concerted investment and strategy around that.
And what I would say, Kathleen, is that I wouldn't make a nexus between the funds going to an arena versus public education. I would make a nexus between the dialogue that has taken place with legislative leaders around that one topic. And if we could have one-tenth of that time, when I say we, I mean school superintendents, if we could have had one-tenth of that time with Governor Walker directly around what's best for public education, I think collectively we would have appreciated it. So he's invested more time in discussing an arena versus the education of children, and I think that's the important nexus.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about that, Phil? Has there been enough public dialogue about all of these substantive changes to education?
I think absolutely not. We have, I believe the legislators and every one of them are doing what they believe is right. But that's where the difference comes in. What informs their understanding of what is right is what concerns me. There hasn't been dialogue. There hasn't been dialogue with our parents. There certainly hasn't been dialogue with us. When something gets inserted into the budget regarding homeschooled students being able to participate on sports teams, when the justification is 10 to 15 parents told me they want this, and that becomes law, mm-hmm. That's not the way government should work. When there's been no discussion with the WIAA, with us, and that's just one small piece of it. That's my concern, and that's where I think you see our parents, at least the parents I can speak to in Wauwatosa, as they continue to learn more and more of what's going on, they become increasingly more concerned with the process and what's taking place and where this is all going. And, for me, I look at it and say, we've got a job to do in running a school district, and maybe we've done too well. We haven't informed people about the impact of what's been going on and what the impact is going to be in the future. So we keep trudging along day to day. But I think, for me, after 15 years as a superintendent and recognizing right now is a critical time to make sure that voices are heard, conversations are taking place, and we need our legislators to understand how great our schools are, that we're not status quo, that we're continuing to work to improve. And I have demonstrations after demonstrations of it in our school district, and I know in Mequon-Thiensville, Menominee Falls have the same things. And I just wish they would come and take a look at that and have a solid understanding of what we're doing, where we're going. So, like I said, I think they believe they're doing what's right, every one of them, every Democrat, every Republican, but that's where the great debate comes in.
We'll take more phone calls in a moment. We have three superintendents with us who are concerned about what the budget will do to public education in the state and to their budgets and to the school children and teachers of their districts. Phil Ertl, you just heard speaking, superintendent of Wauwatosa Public Schools, Damon Means, superintendent of Mequon-Thiensville Schools, and Pat Greco, who is superintendent of Menominee Falls Schools. And they join many other superintendents in districts all over the state who express the same concerns. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, to Bob in Wauwatosa. Hi, Bob. Bob, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right, Bob, go right ahead.
I've got a really strong issue here that I don't think anybody is paying attention to, or maybe it's all been settled. A voucher, which is the piece of paper that I guess people who send their kids to private schools get so they can, am I correct, deduct the cost of their kids' education on their income taxes, am I correct? Is that what the voucher is for?
Yes.
No. Yeah.
Okay. How does this not violate separation of church and state? And I'll hang up and listen.
That's a valid question. I think people ask that. How can you give taxpayer money to religious schools?
That lawsuit and law battle has been fought and unfortunately lost in regards to the courts.
In theory, they're saying the money goes to the parent, not to the school. Mm-hmm. So they're saying it's an education voucher to educate the child that would go to the family.
Camille writes on Facebook, the myth that private schools can educate students cheaper, and we've heard that from people who are proponents of vouchers, and better than public schools must be debunked. Can they educate them cheaper?
It's actually not the same comparison. I think that's part of the challenge, and the legislators know that. It's just when they have the political commentary, it's typically not referenced. Any of the children that are going to the private schools, the public schools transport. The private schools don't carry that expense. When you're doing the comparisons, they'll typically aggregate the private school costs. Many of the schools in the state of Wisconsin are K-8s, not high school programs. If you compare the cost of university school or Marquette University per child on an education level to a high school and include all special education costs and all transportation costs, it isn't less expensive. You know, and they will typically indicate they will serve children with all needs. The children who are most medically fragile and the most complicated with mental health issues, the public schools are the only ones that will be educating that children, special ed voucher or not. You know, so the reality of it is they're not comparing the costs accurately.
We had some parents and an interesting conversation a couple weeks ago, Phil, from SOS in Wauwatosa, Save Our Schools. The other thing that was brought up is this sense of community that public schools give. So particularly high schools, the rivalry with teams, the football games, that things center around or have centered around a public school in a way that it would be hard to replicate with just a series of private schools. It's a centerpiece of community, don't you think, Pat?
When you think about, and again, we're so myopic to think just about the attributes of southeastern Wisconsin. Half of the state of Wisconsin doesn't even have access to parochial schools or parochial high schools. You know, so the public schools are the community, you know, and they actually represent the core values of that community. So that's part of the challenge. We're vilifying entities, whether they're good or not. You know, and we're falling back to just the political statements of anti-public.
Let's go to Courtney in Middleton. Hi, Courtney.
Hi. I was just going to say it's our first day off from school, and both my girls came home yesterday and said how much they were going to miss their teachers, how much their teachers meant to them, how much they got, you know, from the year, all the fun things they had. These people are big people in our kids' lives. You can't count that out, you know? And the fact that teachers aren't getting paid what they should be paid, aren't going to get the resources they need, it's hard. It's hard to see somebody who takes care of my kids and teaches them a good half of the year not being respected for it. I respect it. They certainly value it, whether they realize it or not.
Thank you, Courtney, very much for your call. Pat in Brookfield, hi.
Hi, I'm just calling. I'd like to thank these superintendents for speaking out. I know it's very difficult in this climate. I'm a 35-year teacher, and I think teachers have been, you know, trying to speak out and warn about this takeover of the public schools. And I think one of the hidden agendas here, as a few other people have mentioned, it's, you know, it's the privatization for money, but it's also the hidden agenda is to really break one of the few remaining union groups in our country, the teachers union. And so I think that, you know, it's so important that the leaders in education speak out. And I, you know, I'm really worried that we're going to lose our public education in this state. So I just wanted to call and thank these three superintendents for really leading on the issue.
Thanks very much for the call. And you certainly aren't alone. You met with a lot of other superintendents last week, and I would imagine that there's probably a lot of agreement around the state with among other superintendents.
DeMond? I think it's the entire state at this point where our colleagues are standing up and saying we have to be advocates for the children and for, frankly, the entity that we know as traditional public schools. If we don't defend traditional public schools, who will? And I think that's why the pushback is coming from legislators who are saying, well, wait a minute. We thought we did away with WEAC. So that arm is gone. There should be no noise out on the field now.
Interesting.
And so we're here to say we're here and we should be heard. Before you go
we
to another
call. We
have
about 10 seconds.
We have to have parents advocate. There's still time. There's still time to change this budget.
Thank you all for being with us. It was a very interesting hour. Our thanks to Damon Means, Superintendent of Mequon-Thiensville, Pat Greco, Superintendent of Menominee Falls, and Phil, we thank you, Ertl from Wauwatosa Public Schools, Superintendent there. We will be inviting Republican legislators who are in favor of all of these changes to a future show, so stay tuned. Thanks very much, everybody. Thanks for your calls. Leave your comments on Facebook. We'd love to read them. It's the Kathleen Dunn Show. We're going to be talking with Steve Inskeep following the news from NPR.